Boutros Boutros-Ghali, Secretary General of the United Nations and the Children of the World. There's all kinds of drawings and pictures in here about, you know, children who are panicked and absolutely besides themselves with the fear that the planet is being destroyed. And here it says, the planet groans every time it registers another birth. There's a little workbook in here. It says, turning Agenda 21 into action is a big challenge for us all. Thousands of people at the United Nations and in governments are working on it. This booklet will show parents and educators how children can start to be a part of this work. Children are being indoctrinated. Through outcome-based education, they're being trained. They're not being taught, they're being trained like animals to be obedient, to not ask questions, to not dissent, to go along, to get along. This is part of this plan. As elected officials, I'd like you to know something, and that is that the American Planning Association, which is the the group that put out Growing Smart, has been working on and indoctrinating planners. They put out a 12-week-long communications boot camp from November 2011 to January 2012, where they said that we are, you know, they panicked. They said people are becoming aware of what's going on. We need to change our jargon. We need to re-educate planners, re-propagandize our elected officials. Right here in the Virginia Chapter Annual Conference, this was from 2011, it says, the key strategy should be to inoculate elected officials, cultivate influentials. We want to keep them prepared. We want to change their minds. We want to block the opposition. This is what the American Planning Association is saying now. They are changing their jargon. They don't want to use smart growth anymore. They now use quality growth. And they want you to believe that without planning, you will not have, and I'm not talking, you know, look, planning. I'm an appraiser. The idea of planning is not a bad one. Everyone plans. You leave the house in the morning, you're planning. But this goes beyond planning. What this is far deeper than planning. This is actually changing our form of government. And it has the illusion of being just something that you need in order to know what building should go next to another in the center of your town. But it is far more than that. What they're saying here is that they want to reframe planning in economic terms. They want to do aggressive outreach and have a game plan for the opposition. They are inoculating elected officials. You will hear planners come and tell you that either they've never heard of Agenda 21 or there's nothing wrong with it or planning is great. Regionalization is a good thing. That is what you're going to hear. It's an economic driver. So what's this about? How does it come together? We're talking about greenhouse gas emissions as the mask for this because they say life in the suburbs and the rural areas is unsustainable because we release too many greenhouse gas emissions, right? It's that evil sprawl, which I have to tell you is probably the entire state of New Hampshire. Okay? Now, they say it costs too much to get public transportation out to the rural and suburban areas, so it's better to move all the people into city centers and pack them into smart growth. What's smart growth? It's ground floor retail, 12 feet high, built right to the edge of the sidewalk. 1, 2, 3 or more stories of residential above could be condos or apartments. Around the back in an alley, you've got access for parking for one car or less per unit. Or out in the front, you've got a bike lane. You have one lane of traffic because you have done your traffic calming. And you've got a median. And then on the other side of the street, it's the same. This is, you might have a transit-oriented development system there. You might have call it a transit village. Used to be a city, now it's a transit village. Doesn't matter whether you actually have real transit, it could be planned transit. Because with your sustainable community strategies, you can use transportation dollars to subsidize for-profit housing. And this is what this is about. This is about subsidizing a design style that does not pencil out. All across the nation, you will find this in small cities, in large cities, in little towns. It looks just the same. Ground floor retail, often bankrupt, often not even built out. You look in through the window and it's dirt floor. Upstairs, you're going to find condos or apartments that are either unoccupied or are being used for transitory, transient housing. You know, while, without those traveling nurses, those places would really be down the tubes. So this is what you have. You've got an unbalancing also of your economic system because your housing has been completely upended with these units that are being packed into your city centers that are being subsidized. I tell you, it's me, I know. Here's how they're doing it. One of the many ways, and you have addressed this in your legislation, and now you have your study bill. And this is important because it's good to know this is what we do. You don't just know this. It takes quite a while to put all of this together, and I hope I'm helping today. ICLEI is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. It's an international group. It was founded in 1990 before Agenda 21 with the sole purpose of implementing Agenda 21 worldwide. They say they represent 600 million people in 70 countries around the world, and most people have never heard of them. They are a non-governmental organization, United Nations sponsored. It's a stealth organization. It is a policy and legislation arm of the United Nations. It was designed to monitor and measure your greenhouse gas emissions for a fee. Or if you don't have the money, they'll be happy to give you that software without charging you. It is a non-governmental organization made up of elected officials. Now, you know you've got open meeting laws. The public has to be able to come in to any official meeting. But this is a non-governmental group that has elected officials sitting on the boards. My own county, Sonoma County, California, the national board, my county supervisor is sitting on the national board of the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives. She voted to give an $83,000 no-bid contract to ICLEI to do the greenhouse gas emissions protocols for our county. I reported her to the California Fair Political Practices Commission for a conflict of interest, and they declined to investigate. There is no way to get into these meetings unless you're part of them. You don't know where they meet, you don't know what they're talking about, but they are making policy. Now, you've got 7 cities here in New Hampshire that are members. Now, ICLEI is the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, but they've changed their name now. Now they call themselves Local Governments for Sustainability because they realize that we are waking up, we are aware. So who is a member here in New Hampshire? Keene, Nashua, Portsmouth, Wolfboro, Guilford, Plymouth, Rochester, and something that is not at all unusual, Southwest Regional Planning Commission. You will often find your metropolitan planning organizations and your councils of government are affiliate members of ICLEI. So back in when Obama was running for office the last time, he made a commitment for the United States. He said that we would be reducing our greenhouse gas emissions 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. That seems like an awful lot, doesn't it? So I went and I found a chart. I said, at what year were we releasing 80% below 1990 levels of greenhouse gas emissions, CO2, in the United States? So I found a chart. It's in my book. I took 80% off. I went, what year? What year do you think? 1934. A great year for this nation. I'm sure we were producing a lot. And this is what you look at. What do you need? What do you use? We use energy. That is what produces greenhouse gas emissions. Energy production, energy usage, production, industry. In 1934, our nation was in the depths of the Depression. But if you look at it in terms of per capita, We have a lot more people, had a lot more people in 1934, have a lot more people now than we did in 1934. So if you're looking at per capita reductions, we're probably back in the 1880s. In the 1880s. We weren't producing very much at that time. So this is communitarianism. The end justifies the means. It's all for the common good. It's consensus, and it's secret. Now, I know that you know that the United States did not ratify the Kyoto Treaty. But that did not stop 1,055 United States mayors from doing so. The Mayor's Climate Protection Center, which is a part of ICLEI, agreed to Kyoto. That's anti-sprawl, smart growth, and carbon trading. Now, you've got 9 cities here in New Hampshire that have signed on to this. Concord, Dover, Hanover, Keene, Lebanon, Manchester, Nashua, Portsmouth, and Rochester have all agreed to Kyoto protocols. Now, you know, I was looking at Kyoto and I said, hey, I wonder what nation has reduced their greenhouse, you know, what nation that's a signatory to Kyoto, which one has reduced their greenhouse gas emissions the most? I wonder. So I checked it out and I look and I find, what do I find? What nation? Latvia, clinging desperately to the edge of the former Soviet Union, is little tiny Latvia, which has no heat in the winter, no cold in the summer, no air conditioning, concrete blocks. What else is Latvia known for? Their human rights abuses. So what does that tell you? That you too can drastically reduce your greenhouse gas emissions if you totally control your population. That's a goal. The local agenda planning guide, Agenda 21 planning guide, you're going to find this. You'll find this in your planning departments at your planning, your regional planning commissions. This is put out by ICLEI, the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. It's an introduction to sustainable development planning. And you'll find this. It's all across the United States. I always say we have to tie down the planners, hold them in the room so we can run and get it off the shelf there. That has documentation on how to do a visioning meeting, how to set up the stakeholders meetings, because you know what? Who gets invited to a visioning meeting? It's very unlikely that you will be there. What happens is they may or may not put a little ad in the paper the day of the meeting, but the people who get invited to those visioning meetings are people who are already on board. They are the consultants. You'll find them voting. Oh, it's a great plan. They're going to vote for it. They're on board. You'll have people who are elected, not elected officials, of course, will be there who are on board with it. You'll have unelected people who are on boards and commissions. You have people who are coming out of the neighborhoods who have been identified as being willing to go along, to get along. Those people are often elevated to positions of power. They're elected as neighborhood association presidents by default. No one shows up. They say they represent the entire neighborhood. And this is who the stakeholders are considered to be. The environmental groups are there. These are the people who go to the visioning meetings. So what is the goal? They use the greenhouse gas mask of environmental concern to impose the two elements of Agenda 21, and that is smart growth, which is moving populations into concentrated city centers, restricting mobility, and the wildlands. And that is getting people out of rural areas, blocking access to wilderness roads and resources, and shifting land ownership. This is a plan to shift land ownership from private hands to public, to take land out of production. Now, this is the goal, is to move us out of the rural and suburban areas and into the city centers. And you will hear that it's about preserving farmland. It is not. This is not what this plan is about. So what they do is they change your land use documents. Now, your master plan, your comprehensive plan, your general plan, these are the plans that every city, every county, every town, every state, there are some places in the country that don't have them, but most do. And they are pretty much the, you know, the document, the underlying document that says what your town wants to see, has all the different elements of your town. You know, your zoning has to be brought into compliance with that. Your zoning may not match up with your general plan or your master plan. It needs to be brought into compliance with it. People will not know this until they go in to develop their property. You walk in, you say, hey, I'm in the center of town, I'm zoned C2 commercial, I want to put up a little strip center there. Well, no, because in the general plan, in the master plan, you are shown as transit village. That means you have to put ground floor retail and residential. You've got to have mixed use in order to get your permits to develop. You can't just easily walk in and get a loan from a bank to do that if you don't have a track record doing that. Your risk rates are all different when you've got two different uses. You're looking at someone who's a specialized developer. You're looking at a property owner who may not be able to develop their own property. This happens all across the United States. There's a pressure to develop smart growth. Now, this is the preferred development style of United Nations Agenda 21, and it is also an ideology. So how are they doing it? As you know, as you experience, the federal and state dollars for transportation are being directed through your metropolitan planning organizations, your regional planning commissions. That money, that federal transportation money, is being directed. Housing and transportation, for the first time, are together because your transportation dollars can be used for smart growth. So the money is being directed in this way, and if communities don't want to play ball, they don't want that, they aren't going to get transportation dollars. So here's, I'll show you, here's the cover of the Marin County. This is a Marin County, California general plan. This is the cover of it. Real nice rural county. Right inside of the general plan, you'll see the image of United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. This is not unusual. It's all across the United States, Los Angeles County, all over the counties, you'll see it. And, you know, you'll see it as a visioning project, a Granite State future. What is that? 70 counties, 1.3 million people with a vision for the future. You get your grant from HUD, your $3.4 million for your sustainable planning, right? And that is all about smart growth. Your initiatives, your HUD, excuse me, I have a cold, your HUD, DOT, Department of Energy, EPA, these are grants you get for climate action plans, livable communities, transit-oriented development, complete streets and transit villages. This is all coming through the feds. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Plan New Hampshire, take a look at that, visioning for a sustainable community. It says it develops leadership among the citizenry. Keels, New Hampshire, healthy eating, active living. Excuse me, obesity. It's called an epidemic now. What does that look like? It looks like you got to change your land use documents so that nobody will be fat. Right? Because you're fat because you live in the suburbs. You have to bring people into the inner city where they're going to ride the bus and then they won't be fat anymore. Right? Dover 2023. Renaissance downtowns for Nashua. What do they say? They say transformative projects for the triple bottom line, which is social, economic, and environmental. That's all part of Agenda 21. Like I said, you're not going to see it. Excuse me. Sorry, I have a cold here. You don't see it called Agenda 21. So you're going to have your corridor management plans. Sorry. I might need to take a minute here. Not yet. You could, actually, but I want you to know how incredibly pervasive this is. You've got your corridor management plan that's coming for your scenic byway, right? Yes, and here it is. Land use ordinances can be created to preserve rural character. If you lose your designation, you're going to lose the federal money, right? You want to preserve your corridor by restricting development. Now they say, they say that they don't affect your land use, right? They say they're not directing your land use. That's all about the locals. But if you don't get that money unless you design it and you restrict it, what kind of control do you have? If they're talking about this as a living document, and then you're finding that they change the rules after you've signed on, that's a situation that you have no power over. You've got responsibilities, and you don't know what they are. They also talk about balancing your concerns. This is right out of, I'm looking at the corridor management plan here for Dover. They're talking about balancing your concerns. This is the, you know, this is exactly what I'm talking about, communitarian mob rule. Because the number of owners on 108 is far less than the people who are going to be voting with their clickers in those visioning meetings. Those property owners probably aren't in those meetings. This is communitarianism. In the Bay Area, it's $200 billion. $200 billion over 25 years for all nine Bay Area counties. And you only get that transportation money if you agree to build smart growth. And where they tell you to, they have priority development areas. You're going to see it. It'll look like the same plan all across the United States, whether it's Dover 2023, whether it's One Granite State Future, whether it's the Hanoi Capital Regional Plan 2030, Hanoi, Vietnam. They're all the same plan. It's an unelected shadow government, and it's sold to you as an economic driver. So, it's an ideology. It's not just a design style. It's new urbanism, and it's anti-rural. You'll find the EPA is partnering in 501c3s. Your federal agencies are creating 501c3s with partners so that they can pressure you to accept these land use plans. It gets worse, though. There's 11 mega regions. You thought we had 50 states. There's 11 mega regions. New Hampshire, look at me. What can I do? I'm sorry, I have a cold. I'm doing my best here.
We're used to it.
Are you? Really? I know. I was just in Florida, so. New Hampshire's part of the Northeast mega region. Okay, I know you know that. What is this all about? It's being told, you are being told that it's an economic driver, that if you don't join together with your regional group, you're going to get bowled over by all the other regions, right? That you're going to go under, that you're not going to be able to compete, right? The Northeast mega region goes from Northern Virginia to Southern Maine, from the Appalachians all the way to the Atlantic. It's huge. It's part. Now think about this. These break jurisdictional boundaries. This is important because what this means is that as elected officials, you will not have any power. You'll be rubber stamping these unelected boards and commissions. Now, they're made up of elected officials, right? But you know how much power you have when you're one of 11 states or parts of 11 states, 142 counties, hundreds of cities. It's part of 11 states, part or all, Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire. But not all of New Hampshire, because a lot of New Hampshire is in the wildlands. Okay, now, what is this? The mega regions are 26% of the... Now, I said we were 11 mega regions. It's not that the country got chopped up into 11 pieces. No. It's that... This is genius, really, honestly. This plan is so progressed. You've got your 11 mega regions all around. That's a total of 26% of our land area in the United States. They're not contiguous. They're around the country. The other 74% is the wildlands. Now, Here's one, Cascadia, part of Oregon, part of Washington, and part of Canada. The one in Southern California includes part of Mexico. Breaking jurisdictional boundaries, breaking sovereign boundaries. Most of the cities are Ickley cities. Most of the population of the United States lives in an Ickley city. Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, those are Ickley cities. Most of the country is in Ickley cities. They have agreed to be part of this. High-speed rail is the number one building block. It's designed to fail. It's designed to sink your transportation. It's designed to take your transportation dollars and pound them down a rat hole. That's what it's about. It's about taking your money in every possible way. This is a plan to sink our economy. Social equity. We've got a long way to fall. Like I say, if you've got more than one toilet in your house, you're doing a lot better than most people, and probably one of the poorest person you'll see out on the street here in New Hampshire is wealthier than most of the people that we're talking about bringing ourselves into social equity with. You want to see what it looks like? It looks like the EU, the European Union, which started as a trade agreement. It is designed to fail. Redesigning government. I was just on a global, international global governance conference. I was one of the speakers at this conference with President Václav Klaus of the Czech Republic, Ambassador John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations, and Prime Minister John Howard of Australia. We were talking about global governance, and this is what this is. This is what Václav Klaus, what President Klaus was saying, is that the Czech Republic got its freedom from the Soviet Union only to become basically enslaved by Brussels. The EU is run through Brussels. They have the power to rubber stamp. This is where this is going. Regions, livable communities, sustainable communities, community partnerships, one planet communities, unelected boards and commissions, a loss of our freedom and our sovereignty. This is what it's about. Now, the United Nations has a land use policy. They came up with it in 1976 at their Conference on Human Settlements, which is where we live, by the way. You think you live in a city, it's either a transit village or a human settlement, according to the United Nations. They said land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Oh no. Private land ownership is a principal instrument of the accumulation of wealth, and therefore it contributes to social injustice. Public control of land use is therefore indispensable. Public control of land use. This is the goal, is to take land out of private ownership and move it into control by the government. If you have doubts about communitarian law in the United States, you look no further than the 2005 Supreme Court decision, the Kelo decision. And what that did not. Some people think that that gave government the right to take your property and give it to you. No, no, that already existed under redevelopment. What the Kelo decision did was it redefined public use. Under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, we're guaranteed the right of just compensation when our land is taken for public use by our government, right? Well, public use, it's a road. You know, we think we know what a public use is. No, the Supreme Court changed it to anything that makes more money for your municipality is considered to be a public use. They changed the definition of the public use. The end justifies the means, and this is transferring land. 16% of New Hampshire, 16% of New Hampshire is owned by federal, state, and local government. That's not nearly enough on this plan. We're talking about the wildlands. This is a plan to remove humans and human activity from rural and suburban areas. Now, you are going to find extreme population projections that say, I know that New Hampshire is pretty much